Hello there, and welcome to a Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Poliath. Unfortunately, this week it's the holidays, and Justin is unable to join me. But we're hoping you're enjoying your holiday, whether it's Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, or just a celebration of the season. So, let's go ahead and start taking a look at this week's comics. Green Lantern Corps came out this week, number 4. They had some major retconning going on in this issue. I'm not sure how it's going to go. I think I'm going to like it. I don't like the initial idea that they're going off of, though. But there's certainly a lot of stuff that they can fall into with this that they can build on. So it certainly makes for something that's going to reshape the Green Lantern universe. And, yeah, unfortunately, when I read this story, as soon as they introduced and revealed what the actual retcon element was, I felt like somebody just puked on me. But thinking back on it, taking a look at the story, looking at what's possible to happen with this, I'm thinking that this is going to be a good change. And, yeah, even though it left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth from this issue, I think going forward they've got a lot of room that they can build on with this. So it's kind of a small bad taste that's going to lead to a big meal. Yeah, so that it doesn't taste good by itself, but you put it in a meal and it's going to be fine. So I did enjoy the book. And, again, you know, Green Lantern's been doing strong since before the reboot. I think it's going to continue going strong. Now, something else that just restarted is Incredible Hulk. It's out at issue number 3. And this was an issue of Hulk Smash. Now, Hulk, of course, big brooding monster from the Marvel Universe. And to see him just go at it and smash things is great. This also is kind of a turning point. We mentioned how at the beginning of this run, they introduced the group of government workers that are set up to go after mad scientists, and Hulk originally turns them down. Well, here's Hulk finally realizing that Banner has gone off the deep end, and he said, "I've got to take on Banner." And he joins back up with them. So the art in this, which is Silvestri, looks great. So yeah, you'll enjoy reading this just for the art, and the story that it's building on is getting even better. One of the things that did get me about this is Hulk's facing off against Banner's minions, the animals that Banner has irradiated to create Hulk creatures out of. And it makes me kind of wonder, yeah, did the creatures that are serving Banner get Banner's message wrong? My original thought was that Banner wanted to rejoin with the Hulk, and that's still my impression of him from this book. But the creatures seem to think that Banner wants Hulk dead. Now, that could just be the minions getting the message wrong from the master, and that can set up a neat little change in the end game. But it could also be Banner's, you know, Banner's actual motivations are to destroy the Hulk. I don't think that's the case. That's not what I've been pulling out of this so far. And I think it makes it for a stronger message, and yeah, certainly they're setting up the book for a stronger story arc with the creatures going after the Hulk, thinking that that Banner wants the Hulk dead, while Banner's trying to have the Hulk, you know, work with him, be on his side. So, again, this book is moving along great. It's a lot of fun. Has some beautiful art. You know, just big, mean, nasty Hulk. You know, veiny and muscly as the Hulk's supposed to be drawn. So, a lot of fun with this story, and it looks like you got more Hulk Smash coming up. Okay, moving along to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. This one we finally start to see about that element we'd been confused on in the past. That they'd mentioned that Master Splinter was kind of having these flashbacks of, I've been here before, I've done this before. And they actually give us the history of, you know, Master Yoshi, Famado Yoshi, and the Foot Clan and Feudal Japan. This is definitely a different take on that than what's been presented in any of the turtle literature that I know of, whether it's the TV show, the movies, or the previous comic books. The other thing which is rather interesting is they finally break out from just the red bandanas. In the original book from Eastman, all the turtles wore the red. At the end of this book, they finally switch out to show each turtle wearing his own individual color. Of course, Raphael stays with red, but Leonardo dons the blue, Michelangelo the orange, and Donatello the purple, as you remember them from the toys and from the cartoon. So if you were a fan of the toys in the cartoon and you missed that, it's back. And I think it's kind of a nice way of doing an homage to both the original run and the later runs where they did switch from just the red to the colored. It also certainly makes it easier to tell them apart while they're in the story, because the turtles are pretty much drawn identical except for the coloration. There is also a neat little twist that they do with the story. Actually, two twists. The first is they set up how April O'Neil is going to beat Casey. They've certainly introduced those two characters earlier in this book, and they've now set up a way that those characters are going to be able to meet together, and that'll lead to April getting back with the turtles as Casey has already befriended Raph in the earlier issues. So the second twist, which certainly is not a spoiler, so I'll go ahead and take it. They actually turned this into a holiday issue about April going home and seeing her family, Casey actually not having a family, and the turtles finally coming together with Splinter to become a family and a full family now that Raph is back with the group. So I don't know if they fully intended to have a holiday issue or if they realized as they were making this that, wait, this is going to be published just in time for the holidays. Let's go ahead and do a holiday issue. However it was, it actually worked out well. So it was a nice little twist at the end. It's not really a spoiler because it doesn't really bend any of the story, doesn't reveal any of the story elements that take place in here, although I've probably ruined those for you. It's still a good read, and certainly the nostalgia element that I thought might have been keeping me reading this book is not the only thing that's keeping me reading this book anymore. So I'm glad to see that the story is starting to move forward. We're seeing the ties into the past, and I'm sure there's some other element of how it ties into the past that will be brought out just to help smooth that transition over a little bit more. But overall, it was a good, strong book and a great reveal on the way that the story is building. Unfortunately, Justin's not here to discuss Red Hood and the Outlaws with me. This is one that I've been down on since it started. Justin really likes this book. He's the one that gets it. And I've just been reading it because I want something to be there. I want there to be a good book. And the story actually is pretty good in this. Unfortunately, I still think the characters are not quite there. The Red Hood certainly plays a jackass, and there's certainly characters that it's hard to feel for, and they're not very redeemable in their qualities. But I don't feel, in fact, Arsenal's inner monologue actually shows as a person that's caring and thoughtful and not as irredeemable as the way he's portrayed throughout the rest of the book from the beginning through now and in the stories. So, it seems like his inner monologue makes him a redeemable character, but there's certainly, not showing that in the way that they're writing this book. I still have problems with the way that they're portraying the characters. Starfire, actually, her story advances in this. She's actually taken her first step forward in this book, other than to just come in and blast something or to be the sex pot. So, yeah, this is actually not even much of a story for her. She's meeting a character that's starting to build a backstory for her. As far as, well, actually, it's the character that has a backstory, because her backstory really hasn't changed from what was presented in the first couple of issues. However, this does lead for a way to drastically change her character, to make her more empathetic, more sympathetic, and to create a more depth of a character in here. Whether they'll actually take that road or if this is just a story plot, I'm not sure. We'll have to see as the story goes on whether or not that's the case. Okay, moving forward, that brings us to Brian Michael Bendis' Ultimate Spider-Man. This story is moving along wonderfully, and this is actually where we get to see Miles finally head out in the Spider-Man costume. Unfortunately, he's wearing the old Peter Parker costume, which gets him into trouble. First to show up is, of course, Spider-Woman, and she then drags Miles in to meet with Nick Fury and the Ultimates, which is the Ultimate Universe's version of the Avengers. And this one, Miles actually earns his stripes, and it's actually a fairly understandable story. They've kind of established how Miles' powers differ from Peter's earlier in this run. So to see him show up and be able to use those powers and to be able to upstage the established heroes of the Ultimates, and at least enough that he earns his stripes and earns himself a chance. I'm hoping that we're going to actually see more of the Ultimates play a role in shaping Miles through these next couple of issues. It would actually be a shame to have them come in and say, you're disgracing the memory of Peter, and thanks for the help on this one little case, and then never see them again. It really would help, and especially make it a bit better for Miles' character to have Fury there training him, to have him, working through exercises with the Black Widow or other members in an actual training facility, as opposed to just being out and going on his own. Hopefully, they'll build on that in a way that they can shape Miles through the Ultimates, or at least through Nick Fury, because to have Miles just go out on his own, that's how it's traditionally done, is somebody gets powers and they just go out and they learn how to fight or fail. If they don't have the Ultimates guiding him, which they've already set up that they can do, I certainly want to see him fail a few times. He can't just be a master of his powers and be better than most of the crooks out there, especially if he starts facing superpowered criminals right off the bat. It's one thing if it's just a bank robber, but to have him go out there and face superheroes, he earned his stripes, but he also had a little bit of an element of surprise, and certainly he had some different powers that helped him. But I think he's going to need more than that to build himself as a strong character, and setting up the Ultimates to help him with that will work quite well, I think. Moving on is a new comic from Image, The Activity. This was a book that was really well in my wheelhouse. Cross Delta Force and the CIA, and you get a top secret strike force that does clandestine intelligence gathering and black ops. And I love this idea. This is fun to read. It has kind of has elements of the G.I. Joe books that I'm reading, but it's new characters. There is no plot armor for anybody yet. They're certainly building and developing some of the characters in this. And this issue is actually shown, aside from the prelude part of the story, the main meat of the story is kind of shown through the eyes of somebody new to the team, because they actually do bring in a new member for this book. So it really helps you to understand the dynamic of who's who, what's what. It ex lets the characters explain it without having to talk down to you. It was a real nice way of doing that. And because the prelude of this book, where they first established the original three original members of the team, that was done in Spanish. I personally don't speak Spanish, so aside from like the standard por favor and maybe a cerveza here or there, I didn't understand the dialogue that was actually written in the first couple of pages, but I didn't need to. That's what I loved about this book, is it was great comic storytelling. It's what comic storytelling should be and is all about, where you see the images, and even though you don't understand the words that are there, you know exactly what's going on. You have everything given to you that's displayed right there. And not that, having the words doesn't help and make the story more in depth, but not needing it, the ability to tell the story without that made this so beautiful. And again, it's just those first couple of pages, and then they get back into it, and the rest of the book is in English, so I didn't want to scare anybody off if you don't speak Spanish, because this is an English book. It's just those first couple of pages. But it felt so nice to be able to read a book without having to know exactly what's being said, and yet I can still understand it and know exactly what's going on. It was so well done. I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in this book. And really, anything can, because of the nature of this team, where it does clandestine operations, black ops. They clean up after, this book, they were actually cleaning up after a CIA asset who had to hightail it out of there. There's a lot of stuff that can go on. I think they're going to do a couple of issues that here's a standard issue, and then they'll flip the script and start having problems occur and make things different for the team as they move forward. So I think there's a lot of room that they can go in with this. They'll establish what the norm is and then break that norm and move forward with more radical stories. Even if they don't, this is the type of book where, G.I. Joe fighting Cobra is what you expect in G.I. Joe. You can have something similar where it's just they go in, they spy on somebody, and they get back out. Those types of story arcs would be great in this book. And they've set it up, well, this was a one and done for this story. They can do multiple issue arcs, they can do one and dones, and they can mix it up a lot, and that'll be a lot of fun. Justice League number 4. This is DC's big gun. It's got Geoff Johns and Jim Lee, two of their biggest guns as far as talent goes working on it. And I think the story is thin. This is the big Hollywood blockbuster where there's lots of explosions, but there's not much plot. I expect more from this, especially with Geoff Johns writing it. You know, the art still looks fantastic. Jim Lee's doing a great job with the art. You know, but the story and some of the characterizations, it's kind of a, it's just, they're taking these characters and they're melting them down to just, a caricature of what the character actually is. And I particularly dislike what they've done with Wonder Woman. You know, she's still just a one note, I want to fight, I want to fight, I want to fight. And, the only character that's really kind of developing is Vic Stone, because this is his origin arc. And they're showing his origin in the background while the rest of the Justice League heroes are meeting up and learning how to get along. And there is a little bit of interaction between them. Not that it's not funny. There's a wonderful moment in here where Green Lantern makes a couple of comments to get Batman laughing. Which, to get Batman laughing, is certainly, one of those rare occurrences. If you read the book, you'll see why that happens. And it's just marvelous storytelling, but unfortunately, it doesn't build much for the characters, and there's not much going on there. The story, aside from having a couple of vignettes that are really fun, it's not a strong story. It's almost, like The Expendables, the movie. We talked about the trailer for Expendables 2, which last week, and it kind of feels like that. It's just an excuse to get a bunch of big names together and blow stuff up, which I kind of want more from a big title like Justice League, which is a lead title for DC. I want some more in-depth about the characters, and I'm not getting it, unfortunately. And I think that's one of the reasons why I prefer comics to movies, is for 2 hours I want to go and watch something mindless. For a comic book, I want an in-depth story. They're taking the time they need to build this. That's what I want. But they'll get there, I'm sure. Maybe not in this arc, but next, as they build the team together and they start to develop, I think we'll start seeing some more focusing on individuals within the element of the team, and it'll grow. I think that, so it definitely could grow, but I'm still not sold on this, especially with the big name talents they've got on here. Batman number 4. This takes us down Bruce's history as a young detective. I really enjoyed this book. I've been enjoying Batman since the beginning, and Snyder's doing a wonderful job writing this. You get Dick Grayson in here, and he's questioning Bruce, as he always has. Are you pushing yourself too hard? Are you not paying attention to everything that's going on that you need to? How can you be so sure about yourself? Which has always been Dick's role. It's always been to try and bring a reality check to Bruce as Bruce forges ahead doing his own unique thing. So, this again also shows Gotham as a character, which has been one of the hallmarks of this book since its relaunch. And, we get to see, a whole different side of Gotham. We get to see, what is the background in the history of this story. And, they're really building a history for the city as they build the history for Batman. The art in here is beautiful, and it's just a great story, great arc, and it explores the characters, which is great. Moving on, those were the books that I would have loved to have discussed with Justin. Unfortunately, because of the holidays, he's off visiting family, so I don't want to, say no, he shouldn't do that, because he should. He's got family, needs to visit them. I'm actually with my family now. Just worked out that we weren't able to get together to discuss those books. So a couple of other books that I did read that would be part of my solos this week. Near Death. Finally, this book is stepping into its own story. It's not retelling similar stories that you've normally read. This finally starts to break into the stuff that it was setting up in all those earlier story arcs. I wasn't going to pick this up last issue came out, and I said, this is starting to show where its future is going to hold. But it was still a one-issue arc. This is finally getting there, and I'm really enjoying it. Certainly this book is picking up. I would say certainly you want to pick up the earlier books so you have a full understanding of what's going on leading up to the point in this book. It's not one that you can just kind of pick up here. Well, actually, you probably could, and you'd be fine with it, but I think you're going to enjoy the experience and you'll understand a bit more of it if you went all the way back to the issue one. It's only on issue 4 now, so it's not that far. This may even be a 6-issue arc as the initial arc, so you may even be able to pick up a trade in a couple of months. But why wait? Go ahead, get to your store. I'm sure they can order it for you if they don't have it in stock. Wolverine and the X-Men, I finally figured out what I don't like about this book. The book sacrifices the characters in favor of story plot and humor, which you need to have a good plot to move a story along. But if your characters aren't strong, if the characters become weaker in order to advance the story, or change in order to advance the story, or to add humor, it weakens the whole thing overall. This is done in a lot of, popular books and TV shows. It's the person doing the exact opposite of what somebody would normally do in that situation, because that's what's going to set up the next event happening in this movie or the story. The horror film where the person runs upstairs instead of leaving the house. It's that same type of feeling I get here when they sacrifice the characters so that they can push the characters that they want to, that they're trying to develop for a larger story. And that's why this book doesn't work for me. And yeah, the overall the story is good, but it makes reading it a chore because you've got characters and you're going, why are you doing that? Or who would do that? Who would say that? Why are you acting that way? And it's not that there are parts that aren't funny, but overall it just makes it for a less enjoyable experience to see the characters sacrificed for the humor and the MacGuffin of the story, as opposed to writing it out the way that it should be written and, creating characters that are stronger and better. And not that they're always going to be able to do that, but and sometimes they do have to take a hit, but unfortunately I feel it's they're doing it too often and too much with these characters to make it overall enjoyable. G.I. Joe, a real American hero. Larry Hama continues his run, and the cover was Image is doing a whole series of photo covers, and this cover was right out of my childhood. It's a bunch of G.I. Joes in the Jeep in a forest. And it's what I used to take my G.I. Joes out into the background and pop them up and play with them. Now for the story of this book, it picks up. The ninja story arc advances a little bit. And certainly, we're going to see some interesting steps as they introduce the blue ninjas. They introduce those in the last issue, and they've sort of revealed more about them. So you've got G.I. Joe, and actually it looks like they may even have a way that the blue ninjas are going to be enemies of both G.I. Joe and Cobra. So there's an interesting twist there, and you've also got Darklon, who is Destro's cousin, and the Joes have kidnapped him in the previous issues, and it was a real fight as Lady J got hit for Flint to decide to save her life and potentially lose Darklon, who was the mission objective to capture. So, it certainly is going much more cartoony than I seem to remember the earlier stuff was, but thinking back on it's not that far off from what it originally was. So I'm still enjoying it. I'm going to keep reading it. It's Larry Hama writing the characters that he created and that I love. And there's also an interesting third story going on in these with the character Sneak Pete. Now, if you read the earlier books, you remember that Sneak Pete actually died when they were attacking Cobra, and I believe it was Trucial Absidonia. But he died during the attack. Dusty carried him back so that his mother would be able to bury his body. And somehow he's actually still alive, and it's kind of a slipping story arc that I think that that Hammond decided he needed that character back, and has kind of written a Black Ops cover story for him that doesn't quite make sense in the full continuity, but it's G.I. Joe, so we'll let it slide. We'll keep him there. Moving on to the other G.I. Joe title I read this week, which is Cobra number 8, and this is a setup issue. There is a twist, but it doesn't really have to do with this story. It actually has to do with the story that you read in G.I. Joe Cobra number 7. But that twist does set up for some big future events, and that's all that this has done. You start to see how Cobra, the new Cobra Commander, which was revealed in G.I. Joe number 8, how his style of leadership is changing Cobra, how people are being chosen to go work certain areas of the globe. This is your area, you're taking control of it. It's not just G.I. Joe, Cobra, and there certainly are making changes within Cobra, which is what this book is. This is the Cobra viewpoint of the battle. And so you're getting to see that. But this is mostly a setup that's going to have some big payoffs and some strong building plot points as we move forward. So it'll be interesting to see. They are doing a new, just as they did with Civil War, they are doing a new story arc across all three books, G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe Cobra, G.I. Joe Snake Eyes. And I think they're going to stay with the same format where while it's all, you know, linked together as far as timeline, it's not going to be a true crossover in that you have to read G.I. Joe to read G.I. Joe Cobra in order to understand what's going on in Snake Eyes. I think they'll each stand on their own, but the overall header lets you know the time period that they're all occurring in. It's all simultaneous, as opposed to, you know, Wolverine's in the Avengers. Oh, now it's Wolverine in a solo book, and, you know, maybe one adventure occurred right after the other, but they're being told at the same time. This is all going on at the same time arc, which is why they're banding it together in the story zone. Okay. I did pick up a one-shot comic this week. It was The Last Battle. And this story is a slow burn. It's the story of a general in Caesar's army who's asked to attack the Gauls and, you know, to destroy a barbarian horde that's coming to protect the city that the Romans have under siege. So if they destroy the barbarian horde, the Romans will be able to continue sieging the city and eventually take it. And so the general goes up there. There's some betrayal in this. There's father and son issues. It's a slow burn, though. Overall, I did enjoy the story, but it does kind of creep along. And you don't get a whole lot of character development. It's more like scenes and vignettes of the story. Here's scene one, here's scene two, here's scene three. And you get to see, okay, here's a quick combat sequence. You know, here's a quick combat sequence that establishes this other character. Here's the three of them meeting together and that as they go off to battle, you know, to fight the barbarians. So it is a little choppy. It's not the smoothest story. It doesn't get into depth of most of the characters, really the main character. The general from the Roman army is the only one that really gets kind of any in-depth. But it does do it well. It is, you know, a good story. There are a couple of parts, especially after the twist in the end, where I'm kind of going, I'm not sure that that's really how it would work. There's two or three of those where it's kind of, I think that would have occurred a little bit differently at those times. But overall, the story works and it's good. And the painted art in this book is great. It's definitely paint. It's not as hyper-realistic as Alex Ross is. You can definitely tell that it's paint, but it works for the story. It's beautifully done and is, yes, certainly, yeah, I enjoyed reading it. It might not be for everybody. It is a swords and sandals epic, and, you know, actually, at the end of the book, they do have some, you know, drawings of, you know, character sketches as they were coming up with it, and the writer and artist talk about how they developed the story, and you actually hear the artist, you know, say, and one of the things I hate is when I did the cover, and then I later found out and would have wanted to change it because they did the wrong style of armor that was invented for another, you know, in another decade after the time period of this story. Overall, though, you know, I think you could let that slide because it looks great. You know, but it does let you show just how much research and time the people put into creating this epic, which is Swords and Sandals. It's Caesar, you know, you do see Julius Caesar, and it was enjoyable even though it was slow. So if you're not into a slow book, don't get it. But if you can think you can withstand that slow burn and, you know, a nice build, it's worth it. Lastly, the last book I read is Sergio Aragon's Funnies. And I've been talking about this book. You know, Sergio, you know his work from Mad Magazine. You know, he does help with Mad TV. This book has a pirate ship, a big-breasted nurse, fishnet stockings, Miss Universe, a dinosaur, and a mendicant on the cover. And if you're familiar with Sergio's work, you may understand what I mean by mendicant. If you don't, just realize that it's a wanderer. Yeah. Plus, it's written and drawn by Sergio Aragon. It's got the, you know, two games in it that he normally does, find the two identical items in this picture, and the, you know, find the 10 things that are different between these two images of the same picture. So you got some games in there, you've got some stories. It's fun. And, you know, to see Sergio doing what he does best, it's great. Couple of news stories. The Prometheus trailer came out this past week. And it certainly looks like it's set in the Aliens universe, which is what it is. It is a, prequel. And prequel isn't quite the right word. It takes place in the Alien universe, but it's not an actual prequel. It deals with a different story arc from the Aliens. So you're not going to see aliens, but you will see things that are reminiscent of, the ships, the way things are done. It looks like it's got a lot of action in it, a lot of excitement. It doesn't look to be as much of a horror as the original Alien was, but more of an action flick. Unfortunately, this is just a 30-second teaser. You don't get to see much. Most of what you see flashes by really quick, so there's not a whole lot. But it's something to look forward to. And lastly, they released the teaser trailer for The Hobbit, and of course, Peter Jackson's taken up the reins on this story again. They're actually going to do The Hobbit as two movies, from what I understand. And this transports you right into Middle Earth. Everything that you loved about the original Lord of the Rings trilogy has been brought back, from the costumes, the dwarves, the size. All the dwarves easily identifiable, easily different from one another. They all show character. A lot of people, think about the typical dwarf that you see in the swords and sorcerers genre. It's just the long beard and an axe, and each one of these, you could distinctly see the personality and the characteristics. Some of you may have seen the pictures that were released a while ago of each one of the individual dwarves, and you know exactly what I'm talking about with each one looking on his own. This is going to be more of what we expect from Peter Jackson and the Lord of the Rings, and it's just going to be the prequel, the Hobbit story. So I think as faithful as he was to the original books, you're going to see that here. So it's going to make for a wonderful movie, and I believe that comes out next winter. So we got a lot of big movies coming out between the trailers we talked about last week, the trailers we talked about this week. So lots of stuff that we can look forward to. And lastly, again, I'm going to kind of end on a sad note, which, we've had a number of passings recently, and we can add one more to that list. Many of you know about Xerox PARC. If you don't, the founder of Xerox PARC, Jack Goldman, has passed on. And if you don't remember what Xerox, if you don't know what Xerox PARC is, they are responsible for a lot of the technology that we take for granted today. Xerox PARC is the development side of Xerox copiers. They, of course, gave us Xerox, which is the process that we use in laser printers. So all laser printing came out of Xerox PARC. The graphic user interface and the mouse came out of Xerox PARC. So your Mac computers, your Windows computers, all of that taken out of Xerox PARC. The Ethernet home office, with that big thick telephone cord that you use to plug into your laptop so you can get on the internet, before you had wireless, or if you still use it because you prefer the signal, all of that came out of Xerox PARC. There's so many inventions that came out of there. And they're reinvigorating Xerox PARC. We're likely to hear about a lot of their stuff in more recent years, but just want to remember Jack Goldman, who was the founder of Xerox PARC, and all the great stuff that came out of there. Life would not be as we know it. We wouldn't have Apple Computer. They made the deal to use the GUI with Xerox PARC, so our lives just would not be the same. So I think it's something that we had to mention was the passing of Jack. Hopefully, your life is not mourning somebody that's lost. We can remember Jack for what his what Xerox PARC gave us. Hopefully, you're able to celebrate. You've been celebrating with your friends and family for this, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, solstice, or whatever else your favorite holiday of the season is. If you're Pastafarian or Christian, Mormon, Muslim, Jewish. Hope you're enjoying and have enjoyed, and you're going to be, and we've got New Year's coming up, so be safe there. Until then, this has been a Comic Book Tesseract. You can find us at thecomicbooknerd.com. You can follow us on Twitter at a comic book nerd, at Felix T. Cat for Justin. That's Felix with a K and two T's, and I'm at J. Poliev. You can email us comicbooktesseract@gmail.com, or you can call us and leave a voicemail, or you can text us at 50-TESSERACT. That's 508-377-3722. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your comics, and we'll see you next week.